The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Hemorrhagic fevers and fevers of unknown origin is presented by Dr. David Condolucci.
Fever of unknown origin, traditionally defined as lasting for more than 3 weeks, with all the detective work coming up with no answer. The idea of 3 weeks was to allow all those viral infections to sort of clear out. This is from a study way back, or from an article in 1961, and things really haven't changed too much other than we have a million studies we can do. But at the end, after an intensive evaluation, you still can't find an answer. They suggest that you have to rule out hospital-acquired causes. Okay. And immune-compromised conditions as HIV. Okay. So in an otherwise healthy individual, fever longer than 3 weeks or so with an aggressive evaluation is an FUO. Those that extend over a long period of time who have little evidence of serious systemic disease may not ever have anything bad, and some of them just go away. And we have not a clue what caused it. The ones that are of greater concern are those that look sick, but we can't figure out what's going on. I talked about the hospital acquired, that doesn't meet the criteria. Neutropenic fever, that doesn't meet the criteria. HIV, neither does that. There's over 200 causes described, and I have spared you. I'm not going to show you the list. But they're usually one of the three: infectious, malignancy, or inflammatory. And of the infectious, these are the usual culprits if you find one. Remember, the endocarditis, if it's culture negative, it's probably because someone gave them antibiotics for their fever. TB, maybe it's not pulmonary TB, maybe it's extrapulmonary TB. Or you don't think of quinolones as having activity against TB, but they do. You don't think of aminoglycosides as having activity against TB, but they do. So it may be that you inadvertently have altered the course of that, no matter how well-intentioned you were. Malignancies, lymphomas, leukemia. I saw a patient that it took me a year for her lymphoma to show up. I thought I was an idiot, she probably still does, but it took that long because I could not nail down the cause of her fever. And I always offer a second opinion. And the non-infectious is probably what I've seen the most of, all the rheumatologic stuff. Miscellaneous disorders, including, in the world I live in, factitious fever. Self-induced fever. I've seen self-induced bacteremia. Factitious fever. What is the number one question in a Munchausen's patient that tips you off that they might be Munchausen's? Anyone still awake? Anyone want to volunteer? The number one question. What do you do for a living? Think about it. Probably 80% healthcare. Healthcare workers. First one I saw was the wife of one of our doctors who was injecting talc into her breasts and elsewhere. So she had these ill-defined nodules. And it didn't take a genius when the biopsy came back talc. No one would accept that diagnosis until we sent her to Mayo Clinic. And she came back Munchausen. And so EMS workers, I've seen it in EMS workers. I've seen it in two different microbiology workers. Nurses, what do you do for a living? If it's within healthcare, the antenna should go up. And what about Pell-Epstein fever? This is the only question I ask of my house staff, and there's only one house officer I know of that knew it, what I was talking about. Pell-Epstein fever is where you have intermittent fevers between periods of normal temperatures. So you might go a week or two of normal temperature, and then you might go a week of a fever, and then a week or two of normal temperatures, and then a week of fever. And my first Pell-Epstein fever was a 27-year-old that presented with a big neck mass with a fever, as I described, and what is it associated with? Hodgkin's disease and other lymphomas. So here's a guy with a neck mass, a classic Pell-Epstein fever, and of course, we never see classic cases, but he was, neck mass, fever, and I called ENT for a biopsy, and they said, oh, we're not touching him until the fever goes away. True story. Okay, viral. So of all that on FUO, Pell-Epstein fever would be how I would put that test question together. Viral hemorrhagic fevers, here's a list if you really want them. Lassa fever in Africa, low mortality, that's the etiology. I don't know how on earth I would ask a question about that. Hantavirus, four corners in disease. Anyone know about four corners, hantavirus? It occurred at the four corners where, Colorado, New Mexico, whatever the other two states are right there. Anyways, so it's a respiratory illness from inhalation of aerosolized rodent excreta. Okay, and it's important to know because when they present that way, this is actually, it carries a fairly high mortality. And the only treatment is supportive. It's been described in other parts of the country, including the Appalachian Trail on the East Coast and in other parts of the country, outdoors people who decide to clean out from under their house trailer, wherever those rodent excreta are. And since I have time, I'll tell you how the diagnosis was made. Who do you think made the diagnosis? Who do you think put it together? CDC was called out when this was first reported. They didn't make the diagnosis, though. It was me. Yeah. So the CDC came out at these four corners. Where is it? New Mexico, Colorado, Utah. Yeah, so it was right there. If I could think of the four corners, but where the four states came together, and the CDC came out and could not figure out what was going on. And they talked to the Native Americans. And the Native Americans described the climate for the last year or two, and how the year before, it had been a very rainy climate, which increased the production of pinyon nuts, which increased the number of rodents. And so they sort of put this all together, that this was really an increase in number of rodents related to last year's climate. But it was the Indians that did this, not the idiots from CDC. And then people objected to the way this was named, so they called it the sin nombre, which I think means without name, a strain of virus. Ebola. I'm not going to talk about Ebola ever again, I think. And I can't think of a question that they're really going to ask you about that. Or yellow fever. There is outbreaks going on right now of yellow fever and a shortage of yellow fever vaccine. So they're actually talking about giving diluted doses of the vaccine, which may actually work. If I were to write about any of these, a question, I'd probably ask you about dengue. So someone goes to the Caribbean, comes back with an unexplained illness. What's the differential these days? Zika, chikungunya, and dengue. Dengue is the one that might kill you. So that's the one I'd probably talk about. What about the Aedes aegypti mosquito? What's different from that than the Culex? What's different is it's a daytime biting mosquito. So lots of people, especially if you're from Michigan, you don't go out at dusk or dawn because that's when the mosquitoes swarm on you. These mosquitoes bite your any old time, daytime. So these are daytime biting mosquitoes. That's actually important in terms of protection. And dengue, the first infection doesn't make you necessarily too ill. It's the second infection of a different one of the four strains of dengue. It's a real complex epidemiology. So you get your first infection, your first trip to the Caribbean, you go back again, you get your second infection with a different strain, that's when you crash and burn. And that's when you look like that. And if you have adequate medical care, the mortality is extremely low. If you don't, this can actually kill you.